people who love them.
Hello and welcome. This is Mickey Desai, one of your hosts for the Thing About Cars. Around the table today, we have Becca. Are you there, Becca?
Hello.
And Ben. Are you there, Ben?
Oh, yeah.
And Dawn. Dawn, hello.
Present.
Hey, excellent, excellent. To make things official, this is the Thing About Cars recording online instead of in person for obvious reasons. Before we get on with the show, I wanted to take a quick moment to tell you that our listener numbers have stayed largely the same during pandemic, which is kind of unheard of because podcast consumption has decreased overall during the pandemic.
And it's decreased?
It's actually, yeah, because no one's commuting anymore. So the overall trend has gone down because people aren't spending as much time in their cars listening to podcasts. So what that says to me is that we're keeping our listeners, and I wanted to extend a personal thank you to our listeners for being a part of our Thing About Cars family. And we want to acknowledge that things remain topsy-turvy for a lot of folks, and I just wanted to say we're honored that we get to spend a little time with you during these weird days. So thank you for sticking with us, and please do drop us a line and just let us know how you're doing, even if you've got nothing to tell us about cars. Wouldn't you say, guys?
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you. And I'm a little bit shocked at overall numbers, and I get it. I'm one of those people that do more of podcasts in the car kind of thing, but it's just so many people have been streaming. I guess that's why I was surprised overall, but thank you to everybody who is still listening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's weird. I mean, either our fans really like us, they really like us, or we have a bunch of bots who are listening to us, which is also acceptable. So if you are a bot, please also drop us a line and tell us how you're doing.
They're listening for us to talk about those auto driving cars.
Yes, yes.
And right. Yes, I would say thank you very much, since this is the first time I've done podcasting. I'm curious if people are just zoomed out and that's why they're not doing their podcasts.
I wonder. I mean, there's sort of a twofold trend, and we're completely off topic, but I think that's fine. And that two things happened as soon as pandemic hit. One is that people stopped listening to podcasts with the regular frequency. And two is a lot of people found they had time on their hands, and so they started a lot more podcasts. So I don't know if it's a supply and demand thing or what, but either way, our numbers have stayed flat. In fact, we have, we've never talked about this, but we have almost 1,000 weekly listeners.
Wow.
Which is kind of incredible. Yeah. And I'm really appreciative to all our folks, and we really value your presence, and we hope to hear from you online just to tell us how you are. So let's start with the moment of Grand Trivia Auto, shall we?
Yeah.
Definitely. All right.
And then we'll jump into our regular agenda. So Grand Trivia Auto, this one's very simple. Route 66 stretches between which two cities? Is it Los Angeles to New York? Is it Baltimore to Miami? Chicago to Los Angeles? Or is it Chicago to Santa Fe? Let's chew on that for a while, and we'll answer that question at the end of the episode. So what's on everybody's mind today? Ben, what you got?
Oh, yeah, put me on the spot. related to car stuff, not a whole lot. I've just recently been doing a bunch of maintenance on the cars and motorcycles here at home. Changing oil, rotating tires, things like that. I can't remember if I mentioned this in the last episode, but I had an interesting misadventure with doing an oil change on Jen's Challenger. But of course, you guys have seen this, I think, in our own little messenger group. But for the listeners, what happened was the first time I've changed the oil in this car, it doesn't get a lot of miles put on. It's generally just used for local errands. Of course, this is a V6 model. And I do my homework on it, watch a few YouTube videos. Okay, this looks like an interesting, easy job is what I meant to say. Interesting, yes, but easy, definitely. It's got a cartridge oil filter on top, nice and easy. You don't have to unscrew the thing underneath the car while hot oil runs down your fingers. You just pop off a plastic housing, yank the little cartridge out, stick another one in, boom, done on the filter. Drain plugs in a nice, easy to get to place. Takes I think it was a 8mm Allen or something, not some esoteric tool. So not a difficult car to do the job on. The problem was those little Murphy's Law things. Murphy was alive and kicking with me that day. Because what happened was, as many of you have probably done, you loosen that drain plug. And, of course, you've warmed up the engine so the oil will drain nicely. So the drain plug's pretty warm and hot oil is going to shoot out. And so usually, like many of us do, we just kind of yank our fingers out of the way when the drain plug comes loose and it goes down into the drain pan and we wipe it off. Well, this drain pan I have is one of these ones that's designed to be able to be used as a container. So you've got the pan on top with a little hole that then drains into the interior compartment of it. As if guided by divine radar, the drain plug went right into that hole and landed thread side down. So the washer blocked the hole. And so the pan starts rising quickly, or the oil in the pan does. By the time I see it, it's almost too late. And this engine has a 6-quart capacity. It's a lot of oil and it's rising. And at first I reach in to try to grab the plug. The oil's too hot. So then I'm, yelling curses as I run around the garage trying to find my little magnet on a stick thing. Because it's like, okay, I did not put it back in the toolbox for once. Where is it? So I'm yelling expletives, running around, finally find the thing, fish the plug out. But by then, the pan was already overflowing. Lucky for me, when I bought the house before moving in, I put down an epoxy floor. So the cleanup was a little easier, but still. Everybody can have a good laugh on me on that one.
Yowzer.
I'm so sorry. I mean, some suggestions are that I collect all of the tools that I'm going to need before getting down under a car. So your magnet reacher is a good idea on your list. But
right. Well, that would be. It had never been on my list before. That's the thing. And it's being added to my list now because what occurred to me from the process was don't just drop that plug in the pan. Use the magnet to pull it out of the way once that last thread engages.
Right. Or a good time just to put on some gloves just for the moment of taking off the bolt.
Now, you know I'm not that smart.
Sure you are.
That's so awful. It reminds me of every time we've owned RVs throughout our lives and you go to hook up for the first time and you're always surprised. I'd rather have oil all over me.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds unexpectedly naughty.
Well, and like our three listeners, I, of course, instantly jumped to that scene from Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. Well, I used to work in a Chrysler dealership and, open bay situation. I was talking to a friend of mine who was changing the oil on some kind of car. And we're just sitting there shooting the breeze. And speaking of breeze, this huge gust of wind comes in just as he pulls the drain plug.
Oh.
And so this nice little rivulet of oil coming out of the drain pan suddenly turned into this aerosolized spray that covered me from my belt to the top of my head in motor oil.
Oh, and my.
It was the funniest thing in the world. I mean, at the time, I'm all pissed off because, it messed up my shirt.
Yeah.
It messed up my clothes. And thank God it wasn't hot oil.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell? And my friend Joel was just on the ground and laughing about it. And once I got over my original anger, it was pretty funny. So,
and speaking of lots of oil, though, yeah. I am surprised you've got 6 quarts in a V6. Pontiac holds 8.8 quarts. I about had a stroke when I saw that the first time.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the motorcycle, which I changed the oil on yesterday, is only a 1200cc twin, and it holds 4.
Wow, really?
Of course, it's also got an oil cooling system as well. It's a mostly air-cooled engine, but then it's got an oil cooler about the size of a brick that uses the cooled oil to circulate around the exhaust port areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's German.
All right. We have
It is surprising how much it is, because I think my GL only has like 6.5.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my Mustang holds... Oh, wow. Now I'm actually having to just stop and think. Isn't that terrible? I want to say, because I used to have to argue with people about how much oil it had, and I think it's 6 quarts in that one, and everybody always told me, that was way too much, and then you get to the Pontiac, and it's choke.
I always just thought the general rule of thumb was that 1 quart per cylinder, right? I've had a variety of four-cylinder engines that had four-quart oil requirements, and I had a six-cylinder engine that had like a 6.5 quart requirement.
Oh, that would make sense for a 6-cylinder or an 8-cylinder. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
But Ben is saying no.
No.
Okay. No, four is just kind of a convenient number. It works really well for fours. In fact, for a long time, it worked really well for even eights. But, you know, it really depends on things, you know, because some vehicles in theory don't have to carry as much oil due to the tighter, you know, machining tolerances today. However,
right,
with things like oil cooling systems added, then the number comes back up.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're actually racing your car, there's some evidence that says that overfilling the crankcase is actually good. But
what?
Yeah, absolutely.
No. Yeah. No.
Well, and we're talking about racing. We're talking about high, like drag strip, you know, high revs, high compression kind of racing, the kind of thing, yes. The kind of thing where you're going to rebuild your engine like every, you know, month. And because there's no way I would advise an average driver with a daily driver to overfill their crankcase. That's that's a good way to destroy your engine.
Yeah, it's still a pressurized sealed system.
Yeah.
You know, too much fluid is too much pressure and blowout seals.
Not really on the pressure thing, because every crankcase has to breathe. We just have EGR systems now to recapture it. But for things like racing and high performance applications, yeah, the more liquid you've got, the more heat you can absorb and the more contaminants you can absorb.
But Becca's not entirely wrong. I mean, overfilling a crankcase is a good way to blow out your seals.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you really overdo it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, what else is on our to-do list today? Becca, you got anything? Dawn?
I was sitting here working on it. I had everything all together last time, and I'm, of course, having one of my usual days, just trying to pull everything together. I do have one thing ready. It's a different note than something we normally talk about. Normally, everything is very upbeat and all of that. This, I guess, is a little bit darker than we would usually talk about. But it came to me after Ben had made a comment a couple episodes ago about the driving path that he takes regularly, and that there was an area. I was trying to find what exactly you had said, Ben. It was an area along either in Tennessee or along in 75 that you said you really enjoy driving on.
Yeah, I think it was that mountain stretch of 24 in Tennessee, north of Chattanooga.
You mean it wasn't Route 66?
No. But I have
not
been on
that neck of the woods.
Right.
But I have been on 66, and we'll come back to that later.
Right. what it made me think about first, because I'm from Roswell, Georgia, and my mom's whole family's up in Michigan. I've made comments about going up there and visiting a couple of times on the podcast. So we used to drive it quite frequently when I was growing up, but then there had been this huge accident. So Ben is talking about how fabulous and beautiful, and yes, that area can definitely be. But what was popping into my head was this one area in Tennessee along 75. Has anybody ever heard about the fog area?
Yes.
Yeah, I drove through it last
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. Been there, done that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Last week.
You were there that recently?
Yeah, there was no fog, but I know the area.
Yeah, I have never stumbled upon any of the fog, and I guess luckily, because now that I'm a grown up and I've got my own kids in the back seat when I'm doing the commute, I'm very aware of the fog area just because of what happened there. And at least for me, this doesn't seem all that long ago. It happened December 11th, 1990 in the wee hours of morning, I guess. This area is prone to this very, very dense fog, and it sets in almost immediately. But on this one day in particular, I don't know if this is considered where it's at on the nationwide scale of car accidents. I know at least in this area, it's considered one of the worst ever accidents. It involved 99 vehicles.
Dang.
That just within a matter of minutes, 99 vehicles all plowed into each other. There were 12 killed and 42 people injured at the end of it. And they're still debating. There had been a court case because there was an industrial plant nearby, wondering if they're to blame, what's going on with this fog. And while the court case had a resolution, I don't know if they ever really felt satisfied that here's the answer of what this fog is. I don't know. I know the fog still comes in. I don't know how badly it comes in. I don't know if they're keeping up with their fog alert system or not. I know the signs are still out there. I don't know if they ever flash or not.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I have actually been driving through the mountains up to Virginia when a heavy fog set in, and it is not fun. Let me tell you, if it's just better to pull over and wait for it to rise. That's what I would do.
Well, there was actually a forensic file episode on this. It was so serious and intense with the fog, and the reenactments just terrified me. It was like you were looking with a white sheet on your windshield. I hope nobody has ever had to come across something that bad, but that's what it made me think of.
I did notice last week that a couple of the exits in that area, the on-ramps have crossbars that they can close the access.
Yep, keep people off. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Very good. Yeah. Kind of like the ones that Florida has when everybody's leaving the state.
Exactly.
You know, Becca, I actually had a similar scary situation happen to us last summer. We were RVing in that area going up in Tennessee. We're coming back from Pennsylvania through the Ohio Valley down through Kentucky and hit Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And we were so excited to get to this amazing campground. And all of a sudden, this huge storm came out of nowhere with these extremely high winds. All of our phones went off saying, take cover. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't go anywhere in this flimsy, you know, it's an RV. It's made of cardboard.
And the winds hit you.
And literally, like, we're packed in, luckily, between all these semi-trucks. First time I felt very insulated by a bunch of 18-wheelers, and thank goodness for them, because the trees on the side of the road, with the wind gusts and the rain and the lightning, started ripping and literally, like, being torn out and thrown across the highway. When we finally made it to our exit, literally took us 3 hours to go 3 miles.
Right? That is horrifying.
And it was. And then when we were nearing our exit, two cars had tree trunks through their top, like from the front window to the back window, from the side windows to the backside window. It was frightening. And I literally thanked my stars that we had those 18-wheelers around me, because we were just an RV that could have been blown literally over the side of the hill.
Well, the winds would affect you a lot more.
Yep.
But that makes me visualize Final Destination 2 with the trees going through the cars.
Yeah.
Aren't we a cheerful bunch today?
Yeah, let's take a turn.
I forewarned it was a little bit dark. And in case anybody is on the lookout for this area, it's near the Hiawassee River, near a city called Calhoun that's in between Chattanooga and Knoxville.
Yeah.
So if anybody's on 75, and it's a beautiful area when it's not in this condition, but it's one of those things that always looms in the back of my head.
Just people got to be careful out there. If you're in the fog, slow way, way down. Make sure your lights are on.
Just pull over. Like Don said, if this occurs, nobody can see anybody anyways.
Yeah, that's right.
Until it's too late.
That's right.
Even the lights didn't save people.
It's better to get off the road. That's right.
Yes.
And truly get off. Not, you know, even being on the side of the road can be tough. Like if you can pull off that first exit.
Yep.
Do it.
Right. Yep. Definitely.
All right. We have a piece of user mail before we get too much further into this episode. In fact, we have two pieces of user mail, both coincidentally about Hondas. And we'll do the first one sent in by my friend Brian. Brian has a 2009 Honda Odyssey, and he says that he's been driving this car. He and his wife have driven this car daily for years and drove home last night after going to their son's remote graduation ceremony, right? It was done in their own backyard, but, you know, social distancing and all, they came back and they looked at the car and they realized that the marker lights were still on. You know, not the marker lights, but the daytime running lights were still on. Mm-hmm. Cars completely off. Headlights were never even turned on in the first place. But they checked all the switches. Everything was off. And yet, two tail lights or two marker lights on the rear end and two marker lights on the front end remained on. and he couldn't figure out what it was. He pulled diffusers for the headlights and nothing changed. And he left it alone, and there was nothing else he could do at that point. So he literally let the lights stay on overnight. And of course the battery needed jumping in the morning. But the lights still remain on and he can't figure out why. So I had some suspicions, but wanted to see what you guys thought about what it might be.
What year, Mickey?
It's an 09. It's an 09, and there are a number of things online that he's looked at in terms of trying to find the relay, apparently, and I haven't seen the car, so I cannot verify this. Apparently, Honda makes it hard to get to the relays in that car.
Yes, Honda's notorious for making it difficult for shade tree mechanics to work on their vehicles. They want you to take it to a dealership. They're rather notorious about that.
Right. My first thought was that it was a relay, or that it was one of the light bulbs, because sometimes the lead terminals on a light bulb will get soft and sort of merge with each other, creating a short. And that lets the system stay on all the time. I had that happen in my Volvo when I drove the Volvo.
Well, I'm also thinking that in the newer cars, daytime running lights are automatic, as far as light sensing. It knows when it gets dark, kind of thing. Some cars, they just run when the car is running. Others know when it's getting darker, depending on the system it's attached to. I'm leaning more towards maybe an internal switch or one of the modules controlling as far as here's what we turn on. I guess the automated systems, the automated modules.
Light sensing.
Yeah.
Right. When the car senses X condition, it's going to turn on this. I'm thinking something that's more along those lines.
Interesting possibility. So the control module, the light sensing module for the thing might be on the fritz.
Right. But there are so many different body control modules in cars anymore. You would really have to see a schematic and say, what all is controlling this?
Yep.
And follow it around. And check those, because some cars just have an obscene amount of modules in them.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, you know, Brian is also quick to say that it could just be his wife.
Yeah. Wait. Don't just blame the woman here.
Human error.
Now, in complete disclosure and fairness here, I have actually known his wife since like 1988 or 1987 or something like that. So they're all very good old friends. And we laugh because she does have this weird tendency to use technology, and somehow it always goes a little bit wonky. We don't know why. It's just a gift that she has. And so, you know, maybe she's infected the car with her own little variety of gremlin or what. We're not sure, but somehow this has happened. And
I'm giggling back here because my friend Robbie says that about me. No matter how much I work on electronics and electrical and all this stuff, he's always going, "You and technology. What did you do to that thing?"
Well, exactly.
Oh, and my husband, he's not allowed to walk in the room when I have deadlines. We say he has a magnetic personality. But I'm like, "What did you do?" I walked in the room. I'm like, "How is that possible?"
There's actually way off topic. There's actually a phenomenon that I don't know if it goes too far or what, but it's called sliders. I'm not kidding you, where people affect electrical objects around them. But for the phenomenon, they are way really affects things. They supposedly blow out street lamps when they walk by, which is part of how the name came about. But there are apparently people with electrical fields, I guess, that just zap things in their general proximity.
I've heard of folks that have the tendency to drain batteries quickly. I don't know what that's all about.
Yes.
I've heard of that too. So
they're electroids.
Yeah.
Yes. Issues with light bulbs and watch batteries pre-Apple Watch and things like that. So
right. More energy than water than anything else. So.
Right.
Removing particles.
Right.
So curious, Mickey, did he discover the solution?
He has not. He actually called me this morning to pick my brain and I did not have a solution. So I said, "Hey, you mind if I mention this on the show?" And he said, "Yeah, sure." So
I wonder too, if there's a possibility that this car may have hidden in its circuitry somewhere, a capability for European style parking light function.
What? What's that?
Well, this is
I was thinking that, Ben.
Yeah, a lot of cars in Europe have a way you can turn on lights on either end of the car at a low brightness for street parking overnight, so that they don't get hit.
Interesting.
Ben, actually, that was, I don't mean to cut on you, but both my Mercedes have that. They're parking lights.
Yeah.
And you just switch the little dial from auto to the far right for the right. If you're parked on the left and you want people to see your car, you park it on the right. You turn them on the right. You turn it to the far left for the two. And it's literally the front and the back on that side of the car.
Right.
Are we talking about regular parking light switches that we see in American cars?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, some of these vehicles, like older ones back before, you know, computerized things happened, actually have like a little tiny light bulb, like a flashlight bulb inside the headlight assembly. Old VWs from the 60s, you know, for the European market would have things like that.
Yeah.
The idea being that you would not drain the battery because the draw on such a tiny light would be, you know, minimal, but it would be enough light for somebody to tell something's there.
Yeah.
Right.
One of my BMW motorcycles actually had that too.
Even though you should be able to tuck the motorcycle in further than a car, at least for parking.
In theory, but somebody might see that gap between two cars and try to pull into
it. True. Well, and that's why the earlier comment about the, at the beginning of that, with if your daytime lights stay on, or if you turn them on, or if they're automatic, because some countries, like I believe Canada, requires the daytime running lights to always be on the car. But when the American counterpart is made, they're switched to a switch system. So different countries have different requirements as far as daytime running lights and various things like that, where the automakers will build something tricky like a switch in. And yeah, definitely.
All right, we are rapidly running out of time. Shall we hit the Grand Trivia Auto answer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, so,
here we go. The question was, Route 66 stretches between which two cities? Was it Chicago to Santa Fe, Chicago to Los Angeles, Baltimore to Miami, or Los Angeles to New York? What do you guys say?
Becca? I'm rolling out the Miami because it doesn't go south. It's east to west. I'm trying to remember the ends of it. Wait, what? List the east to west again.
East to west goes Los Angeles to New York. You're saying not Baltimore to Miami.
Right.
So the other choices are Chicago to Los Angeles or Chicago to Santa Fe. Beck is thinking.
I'm going to jump in and say Chicago to LA.
That's where I was just about to, yeah. I was thinking, okay, not to New York. I'm going Chicago. So Chicago to LA.
So you're all on picking Chicago to LA.
Yeah.
You're all correct. It's the answer. Oh. The highway, which became one of the most famous roads of the United States, originally ran from Chicago, Illinois through Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona before ending in Santa Monica in Los Angeles County, California. It covers a total of 2,448 miles, also known as 3,940 kilometers.
Has anybody else been on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I've been on
the sections of the road that are still that you still can get on. I've been out to the western part of it mostly.
A lot of it's been, you know, absorbed into existing road systems too. Like, yep. I've been on a stretch of about 20 miles from out in the countryside that goes into downtown Tulsa. And, you know, the majority of that is just two lane blacktop that doesn't have, it's like such and such road through the county, but there you'll see a sign every now and then that says Historic Route 66.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, I've never actually had the pleasure of being on Route 66. If I ever get any, you know, if I ever get it like a livable income again, I'm going to have to make that happen.
I haven't either. I have not had the opportunity to go out west, but I've been, you know, north to south, and I've been quite the majority of the states up to New England in that area. And I know I've never had the opportunity to jump on it. So I knew it wasn't going to go up to New York. You're not alone, Mickey. I have not had that kind of opportunity, and I would love to.
And when you do go.
It's stunning. And every part of it is just kitschy and fun. And you just can imagine. We actually took most of it. We went from Chicago to Oklahoma one time when I was a kid, and then later as an adult, I did the Arizona LA area. It's really fun.
You know, we should call Charles Phoenix and see if we can organize some sort of Route 66 road trip, right, Ben?
Yeah, you know, he also may have some advice on that, because one thing I've learned in reading about it is that even when it was still officially, you know, Route 66 as a discrete Highway, there were times during its period of service when they changed the route a little bit, you know, just due to development and the march of civilization. So you can find multiple maps for the different era versions of it. You know, the majority of the mileage didn't change, but places where it goes through cities and things like that, or around stuff, whatever, you know. So he may have some advice on which versions are more fun.
We'll have to ask him. So, definitely. Yeah. All right. So that's, I think, all we have time for today. Thanks again to our listeners for joining us. And thank you for telling your friends about us and asking them to subscribe to the Thing About Cars. We love it when we hear from you via our website or our Facebook page, where we occasionally post more fun things. So thank you for joining us on social media and having part in the conversation there. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in about a week. In the meantime, stay safe. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
All right.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.